bother him. I hope, for Jonah's sake, that Elijah doesn't resent him if he ever finds out. I hope it makes Elijah appreciate Jonah even more. Jonah walks into the living room and smiles when he sees Elijah asleep on my chest. He sits down next to us on the couch and rubs a hand over Elijah's back. Jonah releases a quiet sigh, and when I look at him, he's staring back at me. He's sitting so close our legs are touching. The feelings that came about unexpectedly in the kitchen earlier are being shaken awake. I was hoping that was a fluke and that this reaction Jonah elicits from me would remain dormant from here on out. "Scoot over," I whisper. Jonah's eyes squint as if he doesn't understand my direction. "You're too close. I need space." Jonah understands that. He almost seems a little surprised by my reaction. He moves to the other end of the couch in a dramatic display. Now I feel like I just insulted him. "I'm sorry," I say. "I'm just confused."
"It's fine," Jonah says.
I crane my neck and look down at Elijah. He's limp enough that I can probably move him back to the bassinet. I do that because I need fresh air. After placing him gently onto the mattress, I wait to make sure he doesn't wake up. Then I cover him up. I don't even make eye contact with Jonah as I make my way to the back patio. I'm sure he'll follow me, whether I ask him to or not. And honestly, we need to discuss what almost happened in the kitchen, because the last thing I need is for Jonah to think there's any kind of possibility there. Jonah slides the glass door shut after he follows me out. I'm pacing the back patio, staring at the stones beneath my feet. Chris installed them a few years ago. Jenny and I helped him, and I remember how much fun we had. We kept making fun of Chris because, for some reason, he listened to John Denver while doing yard work and would sing at the top of his lungs. He never listened to John Denver any other time, only when he did yard work. Jenny and I ridiculed him the entire time we were helping, so he locked us out of the backyard and finished the patio without us. I wonder if their affair started before then. I wonder, more often than I should, when it did start. I don't know why I keep hoping it's more recent. The idea that it's been going on for years makes it feel even more personal. I guess if I work up the courage to read the letters we found earlier, I might find out some of the answers to all the questions I have. Jonah takes a seat in what used to be Chris's favorite chair. Jenny bought it for him. My God, how can I be so stupid? What brother and sister-in-law get along as well as they did? Why did I never see it?
"Sit down," Jonah says. "It makes me nervous when you pace."
I flop down into the chair next to Jonah. I close my eyes for a moment, trying to push all the memories back. I don't want to think about all the things in this house that tie Jenny and Chris together. I've already destroyed the painting. I don't want to have to destroy the patio furniture and anything else I actually use. When I open my eyes, I look over at Jonah. His head is resting comfortably against the back of the chair. It's tilted in my direction, but he doesn't say anything. He thinks a lot, but he doesn't verbalize a lot. I don't know why the silence is irritating me right now. "Say something. It's too quiet." As if he already had words on the tip of his tongue, he says,
"If you never would have gotten pregnant with Clara, would you have left Chris?"
"What kind of question is that?" He shrugs.
"I've just always wondered. I wasn't sure if you decided to stay with him because of Clara, or if it was because you were in love with him."
I look away from him because, honestly, it's none of his business. If he wanted to know how my life was going to play out, he shouldn't have left without warning. His voice is quieter when he continues.
"You didn't answer the question."
"Jonah, stop."
"You told me to say something."
"I didn't mean..." I sigh. I don't know what I meant. It suddenly seems too stuffy outside. I go back inside, wanting to put space between Jonah and me. But he follows me all the way to my bedroom. Again, he closes the door behind him so our conversation doesn't wake Elijah. He seems a little annoyed that I keep moving from room to room to get away from him. The letters strewn out over my mattress feel like they're staring back at me, taunting me.
"Are we going to address what happened in the kitchen?" he asks.
I'm pacing again, whether he likes it or not. "Nothing happened in the kitchen." He looks at me like he's disappointed in my inability to face this in a mature way. I grip my forehead with my hand, trying to massage away an oncoming headache. I don't look at him when I speak.
"You want to talk about it?
Fine, okay. My husband has only been dead for a matter of weeks, and I almost kissed someone else. And if that isn't bad enough, it was you I almost kissed. It makes me feel like shit.
Ouch.
What if Clara caught us? Would it really have been worth it?
This isn't about Clara.
It is about Clara. And it's about Elijah. It's about everyone but us.
I feel differently.
I laugh. Of course you would.
What's that supposed to mean?
I shake my head, frustrated. You cut ties with your best friends for 17 years, Jonah. All you do is think about yourself and what you want. You never think about how your actions affect other people. I feel the look he's giving me deep in my core. He's staring at me in a way I've never seen him look at anyone. It's a mixture of confusion and injury. He whispers, "Wow," then turns and walks out of my bedroom, slamming the door behind him. Jonah Sullivan running away again. Why am I not surprised? I'm angry now. I storm out of my bedroom, prepared to yell at him, but he's walking out the door with Elijah. He sees me following after him, and he can tell how angry I am because our expressions match. He just shakes his head and says, "Don't. I'm leaving." I follow him outside anyway because I don't feel empty yet. I still feel like an endless well, full of things I need him to hear. I wait until he buckles in Elijah's car seat and closes the door before I start in on him. As soon as he faces me, waiting for me to speak, I can't think of a single thing to say. I just stand in my yard with absolutely nothing left to say. I honestly don't even know why we're arguing. We didn't even kiss. And I'll never put myself in a position like that with him again, so I don't even know why I'm so angry to begin with. Jonah leans against his car and folds his arms over his chest. He waits a moment, allowing calm to settle between us. Then he lifts his head and looks at me with so much emotion in his expression.
"Jenny was your sister. No matter how I felt about you, I would have never come between the two of you. I left because, unlike Jenny and Chris, I had respect for them, for you. Please don't ever call me selfish again, because that was the hardest decision I've ever had to make in my entire life."
He gets in his car, slams the door, and leaves. I'm left standing alone in my front yard, in the dark, full of information I'm not sure I wanted, and feelings I've never allowed myself to confront. My knees feel weak. I don't even have the energy to walk back to the house to think about everything that happened tonight. So I just lower myself to the grass, right where I've been standing since Jonah pulled away. I drop my head into my hands, feeling the weight the day brought with it. Everything that happened with Clara at the school, everything that happened with Jonah in the kitchen, everything he just said. And even though there's a part of me that needed to hear all that from him, it doesn't change anything. Because it could never work between Jonah and me, no matter how long Jenny and Chris are out of the picture. It would make us look like the bad guys. Clara wouldn't understand it. And what would we tell Elijah when he's older? That we all just switched partners? What kind of example is that? Nothing between Jonah and me is a good idea. It'll be a lifetime of reminders that I so desperately want to forget. And now that he threw everything out there that he's probably been needing to say for 17 years, I want him to take it back. I want to go back to yesterday. When it was easier. When he could bring Elijah over without all the awkwardness that will be between us from now on. I feel like he said all that hoping it would solve something, but for me, it only created an even larger wedge. And I don't know that it'll ever get better. We were teenagers. We weren't in love. What we experienced was attraction, and attraction is confusing, but it's also not worth uprooting Clara's life over. I glance up when I see headlights turning in my direction. "Clara." She parks the car, and when she gets out, she doesn't immediately say anything to me. I'm not even sure she notices me until she pivots at the sidewalk and comes to sit next to me on the grass. She pulls her knees up to her chin and hugs them as she stares out into the dark street. "I'm worried about you, Mom."
"Why?"
"It's late, and you're sitting alone in the dark in the front yard, crying." I reach a hand up to my cheek and wipe away tears I hadn't even acknowledged yet. I blow out a breath and look at her. I'm sorry about today. I shouldn't have said that.
Clara just nods. I'm not sure if she's accepting my apology or agreeing that I shouldn't have said what I said.
Were you with Miller tonight?
Yes. I sigh. At least she was honest with me.
He's not a bad person, Mom. I promise. If you just get to know him.
She's defending him, but I get it. When you're 16, you ignore all the warning signs. I blow out a breath.
Just be careful, Clara. I don't want you making the same mistake I did.
Clara stands up and wipes the back of her jeans. I'm not you, Mom. Miller isn't Dad. And I really wish you'd stop referring to me as a mistake.
You know that's not what I meant.
I have no idea if she heard that because she's already walking into the house. She slams the door behind her. I'm too exhausted to run after her. I lower my back to the grass and stare up at the stars. What little I can see of them anyway. I wonder if Chris and Jenny are up there somewhere. I wonder if they can see me down here. I wonder if they feel bad for what they turned my life into.
You suck, I whisper to Chris. I hope you can see us right now because you've ruined a lot of lives, you fucking prick.
I hear footsteps in the grass and sit straight up, startled. I clasp my hand around my throat and release a breath at the sight of Mrs. Nettle standing a few feet away.
I thought you were dead, she says, but then I heard you call the Lord a prick.
She turns around to head back toward her house. When she reaches her front door, she waves her cane toward me.
That's blasphemy, you know? You should probably start going to church.
Once she's inside her house, I can't help but laugh. She really hates me. I push off the grass and go inside. When I get to my bedroom, I look at the letters and cards spread out over my bed. My hands shake as I count them. There are 9 total letters and 3 cards. I want to know what they say, but I don't. I'm confident they'll only upset me more, and I've had enough for one day. I stick them in the bottom of my dresser and decide to save them for a better day, if that ever comes.
Chapter 22. Clara. It was a long weekend. Lexi and Miller both worked late shifts. Other than sitting with Miller during his break Saturday night and spending 2 hours on the phone with him last night, I haven't seen him. I haven't seen much of my mother either. After Friday night's weirdness, she spent all day Saturday on the computer applying for jobs. I spent most of Sunday in my room catching up on homework. I'm later than usual when I get to Jonah's class. I'm the last one to arrive before the bell rings, so I'm surprised when Jonah approaches my desk and kneels in front of it. He usually doesn't pay me individual attention in front of other students.
How's your mother?
I shrug. Good, I guess. Why?
She didn't return my texts this weekend. I just wanted to make sure she was okay.
I lean forward, not wanting anyone else to hear what I'm about to say. I came home Friday night and she was sitting in the front yard crying. It was weird. Sometimes I think she's on the verge of a breakdown. He looks concerned.
Did she say why she was crying?
I look around, and everyone is talking, not paying attention to us. I didn't ask. She cries more than she doesn't, so I just stopped asking her about it. The bell rings, so Jonah returns to his desk. But he seems distracted as he starts to explain the lesson for the day. He looks tired. He looks like he's over it. It disappoints me a little. Sometimes I feel like being an adult is so much easier than being a teenager, because you should have it all figured out as an adult. You're more emotionally mature, so you can handle crises better. But seeing Jonah right now as he tries to pretend he's not distracted, and watching my mother try to navigate her life as if her will still exists, is all the proof I need that grown-ups might not have their shit figured out any more than we do. They just wear more convincing masks. That disappoints me. My phone vibrates in my pocket. I wait until Jonah's back is to the classroom before pulling my phone out and setting it on my desk. I swipe the screen and read Miller's text. Miller.
I'm off work today. Want to work on the video submission?
Me. Yes, but I really don't want to be around my mother right now. Can we do it at your house? Miller.
Sure. Come over around 5. I need to take Gramps to the doctor at 3, so I won't see you after school.
Miller is on the porch, waiting for me when I pull into his driveway at 5:10. He jogs toward my car and hops into the passenger seat before I even have time to get out.
Gramps is asleep, he says. Let's go to Munchie's first and let him rest for a while.
What's Munchie's? Miller looks at me like I've just blown his mind.
You've never been to Munchie's? The food truck?
I shake my head. Nope. He's completely taken aback.
You mean you've never had the Mac?
Is that a food? He laughs and pulls on his seatbelt.
Is that a food?
He mimics.
I hope you're hungry because you're about to have the best experience of your life.
15 minutes later, I'm sitting at a picnic table, staring at the camera Miller propped up with a tripod right before he went to order our food. It's pointed right at me. He said he's going to start filming random things when we're together because it'll be good for the film project to have extra footage, or B-roll, as Miller referred to it. He already talks like a director sometimes. He told me never to stare directly at the camera because we need to pretend it's not there, so of course I stare at it and make faces the entire time he's in line at the food truck. I've honestly never seen Miller this enthusiastic over something. I'm actually more jealous of the sandwich than I've ever been of Shelby. He's that excited about it. Apparently, the Mac is a grilled cheese sandwich stuffed with macaroni and cheese that was boiled in holy water. Okay, so holy water isn't really an ingredient, but with the way he talks about it, I wouldn't be surprised if it were. When he approaches the table, he sets the tray in front of me, kneeling down on one knee like he's presenting a queen with a gift. I laugh and pull the tray from him, grabbing one of the sandwiches. He sits next to me, rather than across from me, and straddles the bench. I like it. I like how much he wants to be near me. When our sandwiches are unwrapped, he waits to take a bite of his because he wants to watch my reaction to my first bite. I bring the sandwich to my mouth. I feel pressured to like it now.
You're gonna love it.
I take a bite and rest my arms on the table while I chew. It's delicious. Not only is it the crispiest, most buttery toast I've ever tasted, but the mac and cheese is so warm and gooey, I feel like rolling my eyes. But I shrug, because I like teasing him. It's okay. He leans forward in disbelief.
It's okay?
I nod. Tastes like a sandwich.
We're breaking up.
Bread's a little stale.
I hate you.
Cheese tastes processed. He sets his sandwich down, grabs his phone, and opens Instagram.
I'm unfollowing you again.
I laugh after swallowing my first bite, and then peck him on his cheek. It's the best thing I've ever tasted. He grins.
Promise?
I nod. Then I shake my head. It's second to how you taste after eating suckers.
Good enough for me.
He picks up his sandwich and takes a bite. He groans, and the sound he makes causes me to redden a little. I don't think he notices, because he tears off a minuscule piece of bread and reaches across the table, placing it next to an ant. The ant eventually carries it away. Miller kisses my cheek, then takes another bite of his sandwich.
You thought about what kind of film we're gonna make?
I shake my head and wipe my lips with a napkin. He reaches up and brushes something away from my mouth with his thumb.
We don't have a lot of time, he says.
We have 3 months.
That's not a lot of time. It's a lot of work.
Dang, I say with a sarcastic undertone. Guess that means we're gonna have to spend a lot of time together. He's holding his sandwich with one hand and rubbing my leg with his other while we eat. He's super affectionate. And he's not afraid to kiss me in public. Or in front of a camera. I suspect we'll be getting detention more than once this year.
"Stop looking at it,"
he says, referring to the camera. "I can't help it," I say, looking away. "It's just right there in our faces."
"And you want to be an actress?"
I nudge him with my elbow. "That's different. This," I wave to the camera, "is awkward."
"Get used to it, because I want a lot of footage to work with. I want to win this year. Last time I submitted, we got fourth place."
"In the whole region?"
"The state."
"What, Miller? That's fantastic." He shrugs.
"Not really. Fourth place cut deep. They only post the top three finalists to YouTube. No one cares about fourth place. I decided me and you were going for gold."
He leans in and kisses me, then pulls back and takes another bite of his sandwich.
"Does it bother you that I kiss you so much?"
He's talking with his mouth full, but it's kind of adorable. What a strange thing for a person to be bothered by. Of course not.
"Good.
I like that you're an affectionate person." He shakes his head, wiping his mouth with a napkin.
"That's just it, though. I'm not. I wasn't like this with Shelby."
"Why is it different with me?" He shrugs.
"I don't know. I've been trying to figure that out. I just crave you more than I've ever craved anything in my life."
That comment makes me smile, but I raise a teasing eyebrow. "I don't know, Miller. You were pretty damn stoked for your sandwich." He has half a sandwich still left to eat, but as soon as I say that, he stands up and walks over to a nearby trash can and tosses it inside. He sits back down.
"That sandwich meant nothing to me. I'd take your tongue in my mouth over that sandwich any day."
I crinkle up my nose and pull back. "Was that supposed to be sexy? Because it wasn't." He laughs and pulls me closer to him, pressing his mouth to mine. It's not a sweet kiss, though. This one is full of tongue and bread. I push him away. "You still have food in your mouth?" I fake a gag and take a sip of my drink. His drink is already empty, so he takes mine from me and drinks some of it. A moment later, he looks longingly over at the trash can and sighs.
"I threw it away to make a point, but I really wanted to eat the rest of it."
He looks back at me.
"Would it be gross if I dug it back out of the trash?"
I laugh. "Yes, and I'd never kiss you again." I slide him the rest of my sandwich. "Here, you can eat the rest of mine. I'm not even hungry." He takes my sandwich and eats it, then finishes off my drink. He gathers all the trash and throws it away, then returns to the picnic table and straddles the bench again, sliding me closer to him. He presses his forehead to mine and smiles, then pulls back, tucking a lock of my hair behind my ear.
"I think I'm psychic. I knew we would be good together, Clara."
"You aren't psychic. We've been together for less than a week. It could go downhill before tomorrow."
"It won't, though. I have a good feeling about us."
"That's just attraction. It's not a sixth sense."
"You think that's all this is? Attraction?"
"What else would it be? We barely know each other."
"I gave up half a sandwich for you. That's way more than attraction."
I laugh at his persistence. "You're right, that was a pretty grand gesture." I lean in and kiss him, but when I start to pull back, he moves forward, unwilling to break the kiss. I turn my body toward him and lean into his mouth. I normally wouldn't be this affectionate with him in public, but we're the only ones out here. For a food truck that makes such amazing sandwiches, I'm surprised it's not busier than it is. Miller finally pulls away from me and glances at the camera.
We should stop. You're underage, and I could get arrested if this turns into a porno.
I love how much he makes me laugh when I don't feel like laughing. Before we left the food truck, Miller ordered his Gramps a sandwich. He hands it to him when we walk into the living room.
Is this what I think it is?
Gramps asks.
One and only.
The grin on Gramps' face makes me smile.
I ever tell you, you're my favorite grandson. I'm your only grandson,
Miller says. He takes his grandpa's glass and walks it to the kitchen to refill it.
That's why you're inheriting everything I own,
Gramps says. Miller laughs.
A lot of air, apparently.
Gramps turns to me.
Clara, right?
He's unwrapping his sandwich. I take a seat in one of the green chairs and nod.
I ever tell you about the time Miller was 15 and we were at the school?
A hand comes around Gramps' chair and rips his sandwich away. Gramps looks down at his empty hand.
What the hell?
Gramps says to Miller. Miller takes a seat in the other green chair, holding his grandpa's food hostage.
Promise me you won't repeat the story and I'll give you back your sandwich.
Come on, Miller, I groan. This is twice you've stopped me from hearing it. Gramps looks at me apologetically.
Sorry, Clara. I would tell you, but have you ever had a Mac?
I nod in understanding. It's okay. One of these days I'll come over when Miller isn't here so you can finish telling me. Miller hands Gramps back his sandwich.
Clara and I have a project to work on. We'll be in my room. You don't have to lie to me,
Gramps says.
I was 17 once. I'm not lying,
Miller says.
We really do have to work on a project. Whatever you say.
Miller rolls his eyes as he pushes out of his chair. He grabs my hand and pulls me up.
I apologize on behalf of my grandpa.
Why? You're lying to him. We don't have a project to work on. Miller rolls his head.
Yes, we do.
He looks at his grandpa disapprovingly.
You two aren't allowed to hang out anymore. You're too much alike.
Gramps smiles at me as we leave the living room. When we walk down the hallway, I glance into their bathroom. Miller sees my pause. There are multiple pill bottles lined up on the counter, and the reminder that his grandpa is sick makes my stomach twist into a knot. Once we're in Miller's bedroom, he can tell my mood has shifted.
Thinking about Gramps?
I nod.
Yeah. Sucks. Bad.
He kicks off his shoes and lies down in the middle of the bed, patting the mattress next to him. I kick off my shoes and crawl in, tucking myself to his side, draping my arm over him. How'd the doctor visit go today? He pushes back my hair, running his fingers all the way to the ends.
We talked about what to expect over the next few months. It's not really safe for him to be here alone while I'm in school, so they're putting him on hospice soon. Once he's on hospice, an aide will be here with him most of the time, so that's a relief. I won't have to drop out of school.
I sit up on my elbow. Was that really your only option?
Yeah. My mother died when I was 10, and he's her father. I have an uncle who lives in California, but he's not much help from there. Other relatives stop by a lot, make sure we have what we need. But I've lived with him since I was 10, so most of the responsibility falls on my shoulders.
I had no idea his mother passed away. I'm so sorry. I shake my head. That's a lot of pressure for someone your age. Miller rests a hand on my cheek.
You're only 16, and look at what you've been through. Life doesn't play favorites.
He pulls my head to his chest.
I don't want to talk about it anymore. Let's talk about something else.
He smells good. Like lemon this time. When's your birthday? I ask.
December 15th?
He pauses.
Yours is next week, right?
I nod, but I'd like to forget. With my birthday comes the traditional birthday dinner, but this will be the first one without my dad and Aunt Jenny. I don't want to think about it, so I change the subject. What's your favorite color?
I don't have one. I like all of them except orange.
Really? I like orange.
You shouldn't. It's a terrible color,
he says.
What's your least favorite color?
Orange.
You just said you like orange.
You made me doubt it. Like, maybe there's something wrong with it that I'm not aware of.
There's a lot wrong with orange,
he says.
It doesn't even rhyme with anything.
Is it the color or the word you don't like?
Both. I hate them both.
Did something in particular spark this immense hatred?
No, it came about naturally, I guess. Maybe I was born this way.
Is it a particular shade of orange you loathe?
No, I hate them all,
he says.
Every shade of orange from mango to coral.
I laugh. This is the stupidest conversation I've ever had.
Yeah, we're kind of bad at this. Maybe we should just kiss.
I pull my head from his chest and look up at him. And hurry, because I'm starting to forget why I'm even attracted to you. He grins, and then rolls on top of me, brushing back my hair while he smiles lazily.
Need a reminder?
I nod. This is the most connection our bodies have ever had. We've kissed standing up. We've kissed in his truck. We've kissed sitting down. But we've never kissed on a bed with his body between my legs. He rests his mouth against mine, but doesn't kiss me. He adjusts the pillow beneath my head. Then he kicks the covers away, all while barely teasing my lips with his. This sure is taking a long time, I say.
I want you to be comfortable.
He keeps his mouth near mine and lifts my neck a little, pulling my hair out from beneath me. He piles it over my shoulder and whispers,
"Ready?"
against my lips. I start to laugh, but the laugh never happens, because Miller's tongue parts my lips and my near laugh turns into a gasp. It feels different like this, with him on top of me. Better. The kiss is nice. Slow flicks of his tongue, his fingers trailing down my arm, mine trailing up his back. But then I feel him begin to harden between my legs, and it both surprises me and gives me confidence. I wrap my legs around his waist, wanting to ease the ache I'm beginning to feel there, but it only makes it worse. His kiss deepens, and he pushes against me, forcing a moan up my throat. He pauses the kiss for a second, as if that sound does something to him, but then he brings his mouth back to mine with an even more profound urge. I lift the back of his shirt, wanting to feel his skin beneath my palms. I run my hands up his back until I reach the tight curves of his shoulder muscles. Before I know it, I'm tugging at his shirt, wanting it off him. He obliges and separates us for the 3 seconds it takes for him to take off his shirt and throw it on the floor. The next few minutes don't escalate beyond the shirt removal, but it doesn't de-escalate either. The makeout session just leaves us both aching and panting and not at all in the mood to work on our project. Miller eventually rolls off of me, onto his side with his mouth still on mine. We kiss like that for a minute. It's not as exciting, but I think that's the point. He's trying to slow down something I don't think he intended to start. His eyes are closed when he finally stops kissing me, and then he presses his forehead to mine. He brings his hand to my chest and rests it there, feeling my heart thumping wildly against his palm. When he pulls away and opens his eyes, he's smiling down at me.
You know what else sucks about the color orange?
I laugh.
What? All the celebrities used that orange square to announce Fyre Festival. Look how that turned out.
You're right, orange is the worst. He falls onto his back and stares up at the ceiling. It's quiet for a moment, and my heart is still racing.
Did you want me to stop?
He asks. Stop what?
Making out with you?
I shrug. Not really, I was enjoying it.
I wasn't sure. I didn't want to move too fast, but I really wanted to take off your shirt. Not your bra, just your shirt.
I'm cool with that. He raises an eyebrow.
Yeah?
Sure.
Is your bra orange?
No, it's white.
Good.
He rolls back on top of me and starts kissing me again. Suffice it to say, we don't get anything done on the project. But he also stays true to his word and doesn't even attempt to remove my bra.
Chapter 23. Morgan. I wake up to the sound of my phone vibrating on my nightstand. I look over at the window, but the sun hasn't even fully risen yet. No one calls me this early. I reach over and pick up my phone and see Jonah's name at the top of the screen. I drop the phone on the nightstand and fall back onto my pillow. We haven't spoken in over a week. Not since the night we almost kissed. He's texted twice asking how I'm doing. I didn't respond to either text. It's hard, because I want to separate myself from him, but at the same time, I want to spend time with Elijah. It sucks that Jonah and Elijah are a package deal. I'm hoping we can work out some kind of visitation schedule. It would be even better if we didn't have to go to each other's houses to exchange Elijah. We could Uber Elijah back and forth. That thought makes me laugh, Ubering babies from house to house. I wonder if there's a minimum age limit for Uber passengers. My phone pings. A text. I swing my arm back to my nightstand and pull my phone to my face. I sit up in bed when I see how many missed calls and texts I have from Jonah. I throw the covers off and stand up, urgently pressing the screen to call him back. He answers on the first ring.
Morgan?
Is Elijah okay? Jonah sighs with relief at the sound of my voice.
I'm sorry to even ask you, but he's been up all night with a fever, so I can't take him to daycare. But I can't call into work today. It's state testing for the freshmen, and after school lets out, I have two conferences
Of course. My hand is on my chest. My heart is pounding. I thought it was something worse. Of course. Bring him over. Jonah's voice is softer, less panicked.
I won't be able to pick him up until after 6.
It's fine. I miss him. I spend the next 20 minutes in the kitchen cooking. Jonah sounded so stressed on the phone, and if Elijah was up all night with a fever, that means Jonah is going to need some energy today. I used to do this for Chris. I'd make breakfast burritos packed with protein and send a bag with him on his busiest days. I might also be making Jonah breakfast as somewhat of an apology. I feel like I was too harsh on him last week. Maybe I've been too harsh on him since he came back into our lives. Either way, burritos will make it better. I'm also hoping this is a step forward. Maybe we can work out some sort of deal to where Elijah can be a huge part of my life, and Jonah and I can build an actual friendship. I stay up most nights, thinking about what he said to me in the driveway. And while it did have a profound impact on the resentment I've been holding toward him, I also realize that the feelings he was talking about were in the past. We were teenagers back then. We were different people. He wasn't saying that he still felt that way. He was simply saying he used to feel that way. He's been back in our lives for several months now, and nothing outside of that near kiss has indicated he still has those same feelings. So whatever he thought he felt for me when we were teenagers is something he obviously worked through during the years he was away. Otherwise, he wouldn't have slept with Jenny when they ran into each other last year. And he wouldn't have moved in with her or agreed to marry her if he still had feelings for me. That gives me hope that a friendship between us might actually work. I'm stuffing the burritos into a bag when there's a knock at the door. I let Jonah in, but I pause for a second when I take him in.
He's dressed up today. He's wearing a black long-sleeved dress shirt with a black and silver tie. He shaved his stubble and finally got a haircut. He looks younger. I start to comment on how nice he looks, but think better of it. Elijah's fussing in the car seat, so I unbuckle him and take him out of it. He's warm when I pull him to my chest. Poor thing. He sounds congested. Are you giving him anything? Jonah nods and pulls a couple of prescription bottles out of the diaper bag.
I took him to the ER around midnight. They gave me these, said to rotate them every 4 hours.
He holds one of them up.
Give him this one in 2 hours.
He sets the diaper bag down.
I packed extra clothes and rags. You might need them today.
You took him to the emergency room? Have you even slept? As if the thought of it is a trigger, Jonah yawns, covering his mouth with a fist. He shakes his head.
I'll be okay. I might have time to make a Starbucks run.
He opens the living room door to leave. Wait! I go to the kitchen and grab the sack of breakfast burritos, running them back to him before he escapes. I made these for you. Breakfast burritos? Sounds like you're about to have a long day. Jonah looks at me with a soft appreciation as he takes it from me.
Thank you.
There's a little bit of surprise in his voice, and I try not to let that please me, but it does. It feels good to do something nice for him. I've been so hard on him for so long. I'll text you with updates on Elijah. Don't worry. He's in good hands. Jonah smiles.
I don't doubt that for a second. See you tonight.
As soon as he leaves, Clara walks around the corner, dressed for school. She sees Elijah in my arms and lights up, holding her arms out in front of her. Gimme. I hand him to her. He's sick. Don't kiss him. You might catch it. She cradles him against her chest and kisses his forehead anyway. Sick babies need all the kisses they can get. She's right. When Clara was a baby, the sicker she was, the more I coddled her and kissed her and just wanted to take all her aches and pains away. God, I miss those days. I'm sure sometime in the near future I'll miss these days. I feel like Clara and I are an impossible pair this year, but I know I'll miss it after she moves out and starts a life of her own. I'll miss it all. The arguments, the silent treatments, the groundings, the rebellious behavior. Why are you looking at me like that? Clara asks. I smile and pull her in for a hug. She's holding Elijah so she can't reciprocate the hug, but it's enough that she isn't pulling away. I kiss the side of her head. I love you. When I pull back, she's looking at me with a cautious expression, but then she smiles and says, Love you too, Mom. She goes to the couch to sit with Elijah. I made breakfast burritos. Left you some on the counter. Clara perks up. Bacon or sausage? Both. Yes, she whispers. She gives her attention back to Elijah. I love you, buddy, but I have breakfast to eat. I shoot Jonah a text around 10 to let him know Elijah's fever has gone down a little. He responds at noon. Jonah,
is he sleeping at all?
Me, not really. I bet he'll crash once his fever finally breaks, though.
Jonah, hopefully he waits until I'm ready to crash. This has been the longest day and it's only noon. The breakfast was a godsend. Thanks for that.
Me, I have a roast in the crock pot. Claire and I won't eat it all, so I can send some home with you when you pick up Elijah.
Jonah, perfect. Thanks again.
2 hours later, I get another text from Jonah.
Jonah, is he asleep yet?
Me. He took a 15-minute nap, still has fever, but he's not as fussy as he was. Then a text from Clara. Clara, Miller and I need to work on our project after school. We'll be at Starbucks. Me. What project? This is the first I'm hearing about a project with Miller. Clara, Jonah partnered us up for the UIL film submission. We have less than 4 months to finish. I text Jonah. Me. You partnered Clara up with Miller Adams on the film project?
Jonah. Yes. Is that an issue?
Me. I'm assuming in more ways than one, considering he introduced her to drugs, and Chris already told her to stay away from him.
Jonah. Miller isn't as bad as you seem to think he is. Chris didn't even know the kid, so his opinion doesn't count.
Me. I formed my own opinion of the kid. He talked Claire into leaving her father's funeral. He got her high. And according to a voicemail I received from the school, they both had detention last week due to PDA. She never did any of this before he was in the picture. And even if he's not the cause of her actions, I'd still rather her be with someone who would talk her out of doing those things, rather than be the type of teenage boy to encourage her behavior.
Jonah. I don't think that kind of teenage boy exists in real life.
Morgan, you're not making me feel better about this. I wait for his response, but I don't get one. I spend the rest of the afternoon trying to keep Elijah awake so that he'll sleep for Jonah tonight. But once 6 o'clock hits, there's no hope left. He's out cold. His tiny body is limp in my arms, deep in sleep as I place him in his bassinet. His fever finally broke a couple of hours ago. So I think the worst is over, but I have a feeling after Elijah sleeps for a few hours, he'll be up all night with Jonah. Maybe I should offer to keep him for the night so Jonah can rest. I pull out my phone to text Jonah those exact words when he knocks on the front door. I look down at Elijah, and the sound doesn't even make him flinch. When I open the front door, I whisper, "He just fell asleep." Jonah is no longer wearing a tie. The top two buttons of his shirt are undone, and his hair is messier than it was this morning. He looks even better than he did this morning, despite the exhaustion consuming him. Why am I even having these thoughts? I motion for him to come to the kitchen so I can make him a plate of food to take with him. I pull Tupperware from the cabinet.
Have you already eaten?
Jonah asks. Not yet.
I'll just eat here, then.
He opens the cabinet next to me, where I keep the plates, and he removes two of them. I replace the Tupperware in the cabinet and take a plate from him. This is good. This is casual. Friends eat food together. We both make our plates and take a seat at the table. As normal as it is for two people to eat a meal together, Jonah and I have never done so without Chris and Jenny. That part seems off. Like there are two huge gaping holes sucking the comfort out of the meal.
This is really good, Jonah says, taking another bite. So were your burritos.
Thanks.
Is everything you cook this good?
I nod confidently. I'm a great cook. Chris hated going out to eat because he said restaurants never compared to what he got at home.
How was he not fat?
Jonah shakes his head.
I'd get so fat eating this every day.
He worked out twice a day. You know that. It feels weird talking about Chris like we don't hate him, but I like it. Eventually, I'd like to remember all the good memories without the shadow of the bad ones. We had a lot of good memories together.
Where's Clara?
I point my fork at him. With that boy? All your fault? Jonah laughs.
He's still one of my favorite students. I don't care what you think of him.
What kind of student is Clara?
Great, he says.
No, for real. Don't tell me what I want to hear. I want to know what she's like when she's not around me. Jonah regards me quietly for a moment.
She's good, Morgan. Really good. Always turns her homework in on time, makes good grades, doesn't act up in class, and she's funny. I like her sarcasm.
He smiles.
She gets that from you.
She is a lot like I was at that age.
She's a lot like you are now. You haven't changed.
I release a half-hearted laugh.
Okay.
He looks at me with a little too much seriousness.
You haven't. At all.
I look down at my plate and mindlessly scoot food around. I don't know if that's a compliment. It's kind of pathetic that I'm still the same person I was at 17. No education, no work experience. Not a single thing to put on my resume. Jonah stares at me for a moment, then looks down at his plate, poking his fork into a carrot.
I wasn't talking about your resume. I'm talking about everything else. Your humor, your compassion, your level-headedness, your confidence, your discipline.
He pauses for a quick breath, then says,
Your smile.
He shoves the bite of food into his mouth. I look down. Completely losing the smile he's referring to because I felt that. Everything he just said, every compliment felt like darts stabbing at my heart. It makes me sigh. I lose my appetite. I stand up and toss the remaining food from my plate into the trash can. I rinse the plate off in the sink. My chest is constricted. My hands are shaking. I don't like that I'm having a physical reaction to his presence, but friends don't say those things to friends while having the look in their eyes that Jonah just had. He still has feelings for me. I don't know how to process that because it fills me with so many more questions. Jonah brings his empty plate to the sink and rinses it under the water. I pull my hands back and grip the counter, staring into the sink. He's standing next to me, staring at me. I can't look at him. I'm embarrassed that I even feel anything right now, but I do. And it's confusing because all I feel is jealousy. It's a feeling that's always been there, but it's something I've never allowed myself to acknowledge. But the jealousy is there, and it's loud, and it's forcing me to confront it. Why did you sleep with her last year? As soon as the question passes my lips, I regret it. But since the day Jenny came home from Jonah's father's funeral and told me she'd had a one-night stand with him, I've been full of anger. It somehow felt as if Jonah had betrayed me, even though he didn't belong to me. Jonah takes a step closer. Not close enough that we're touching, but close enough that it feels like we are.
I don't know. Maybe because she was there, he says quietly. Or maybe because you weren't.
I cut my eyes to his. I wouldn't have slept with you if that's what you're saying.
That's not what I'm saying. What I mean is that I was hurt that my father died and you weren't there. Even though we didn't keep in touch, you knew about the funeral because Jenny was there.
He sighs regretfully.
Maybe I did it hoping it would hurt you.
That's a terrible reason to sleep with someone.
He laughs unconvincingly.
Yeah, well, I don't expect you to understand. You were never in my shoes. You didn't have to stand on the sidelines and watch the girl you were in love with build a life with your best friend.
Those words leave me breathless. He breaks eye contact with me.
Jealousy can make a person do some shitty things, Morgan.
He stands up straight, sensing he's worn out his welcome.
I should go.
Yes. My voice comes out raspy and coarse. I clear my throat. You should. He nods, disappointed that I'm agreeing with him. He taps the fridge twice with an open palm, then walks out of the kitchen. As soon as he's no longer in the same room with me, I refill my lungs with air. His presence still lingers all around me as he gathers Elijah's things. Before he lifts him out of the bassinet, he pauses and walks back to the kitchen. He stands in the doorway, the diaper bag draped over his shoulder.
Was it mutual?
I shake my head a little, revealing my confusion. I don't know what you mean.
How I felt about you. I could never tell. Sometimes I thought you felt the same way, but I knew you'd never admit it back then because of Jenny, but I need to know. Did you feel what I felt?
The hammering in my chest is back. He's never confronted me like this. I wasn't expecting it. It's hard to admit something out loud to someone else that you've only just admitted to yourself. Jonah drops a diaper bag to the floor and strides across the kitchen. He doesn't stop until his body and his mouth are both pressed firmly against mine. It's a shock to my system. I grip the counter behind me, just as his hold tightens on my cheeks. I feel so much I'm afraid I might sink to the floor. I press my palms against his chest, fully prepared to push him away. But instead, I find myself pulling him closer with two fistfuls of his shirt. When he parts my lips with his and I feel his tongue slide against mine, I experience a full body shiver. It's so much all at once. It's an awakening, but it's also a death. It's the realization that I've gone my whole life being kissed by the wrong man. Jonah gets the answer to his question by the way I respond to him. His feelings are definitely mutual. They always have been, no matter how much denial I've shoveled on top of that mutual attraction. My body conforms to his like I'm afraid something will wedge itself between us if I let go. And then sadly, it does.
Chapter 24. Clara. Mom? It's the only word I can manage to say, but it's powerful enough to put a 5-foot divide between them. My mother turns away from me. Jonah looks down at his feet. I just stare at them in disbelief. I'm shaking my head, trying to convince myself that I didn't just see that. My mother kissing her dead sister's fiancé. My mother kissing her dead husband's best friend. I take a step out of the doorway as if the room is contaminated with betrayal, and I'm afraid I might catch it. My mother takes a breath and then faces me, tears rimming her eyes. Clara? I don't give her the chance to explain. I don't really want to know why that was happening. I run to my room because I need solitude before they're able to reach me. I slam my door and lock it. Then, for extra reassurance, I scoot my nightstand in front of it. Clara, open the door, my mother says, her tearful voice muffled by the door, her knuckles rapping against it.
Clara, Jonah is speaking now. Please open the door.
Leave me alone! My mother is crying. I can hear Jonah apologizing, but it's so quiet I know he's not apologizing to me. He's apologizing to my mother. Just go, I hear her say. Jonah's footsteps fade down the hallway. She knocks on the door again. Clara, please open the door. You don't understand. It's... Just open the door. I flip off my light. I'm going to bed. I don't want to speak to you tonight. Go away! I fall onto my bed. The knocking against my bedroom door finally stops. Not even 2 minutes later, I hear the front door slam shut. My mother tries one more time to get me to open the door, but I roll onto my side and ignore her, covering my ears with a pillow. After a few minutes of attempting to regulate my breathing, I release the pillow. The knocking has ceased. Hopefully for good this time. I hear her bedroom door close across the hall, which means I have until morning to talk myself out of murdering her. I push myself off the bed. I begin to pace my room, my skin buzzing with anger. How could she do this? They just died 2 months ago. A thought rips through me and causes me to fall back onto the bed. How long has she been doing this? I start to think back on the last several weeks. Jonah has been over here so many times since my father and Aunt Jenny died. My memory is awakened with an entirely new perspective of every moment. The night they were outside in the dark when I got home, the night he came to fix the door, the excuse he made that he needed to come back the next day to finish the door. That time they left the house together, and when I looked on the app, it showed my mom's phone had been at the Langford Hotel. That was only a week after their deaths. I feel like I might be sick. How long have they been having an affair? I feel so stupid. Jonah is always asking about her in class, pretending it's concern. Did Elijah really even have a fever this morning? Hell, Jonah probably stayed the night last night, and I had no idea because I was in my bedroom. It would explain why he was here so early. Why my mother finally cooked breakfast for the first time since before my father died. I pray my father had no idea. This whole time, I've been feeling so guilty for possibly having a hand in ruining everyone's lives, but Jonah and my mother have been ruining everyone's lives since before the accident. How could my mother do this to Jenny? I don't have a sister, but what kind of human would do that to their own flesh and blood? I hate her so much right now. I hate her so much, I'd be fine if I never even spoke to her again. I hate her so much, I sit on the edge of my bed and think of all the ways I can get revenge for what they have been doing to our family. I'm running out of ways to rebel. I've done drugs, I've gotten detention, I've lied, I've missed curfew. The only thing left I could do that I know would upset her is if I were to have sex with Miller. She's always begged me to wait until I was at least 18, which I probably wasn't going to do anyway. But if she knew I lost my virginity at 16, and to Miller Adams, it would destroy her. I look at my alarm clock. It's not even 8 o'clock yet. I still have 4 hours to make it happen before my birthday tomorrow. And I really need Miller right now anyway. His presence is very calming, and I could use some calming vibes. I grab my phone and call Miller.
Hey,
he says, answering right away.
What's up?
What time do you get off work?
Not for another half hour. You can still come kiss me goodnight before your curfew, though.
Will you come to my house when you leave?
Your house?
He pauses.
Are you sure?
Yeah, but use the bedroom window.
Oh, are we being sneaky?
I can hear the grin in his voice.
Okay, but I've never been inside your house. I don't know which window yours is.
First window, right side of the house.
Facing the house?
Yes. And bring a condom? He pauses for several long seconds.
Are you sure?
Positive.
It's... Clara, we don't have to.
You promised you weren't going to talk me out of it.
I don't know that it was a promise. And I assumed it would be a while before we...
I changed my mind. I don't want to wait until prom. He's silent again. Then he says...
Okay. Yeah. Be there in less than an hour.
I turn on my radio to help drown out any noise Miller or I might make. I light two candles and put one by my bed and one by the window so that he can make his way around my dark bedroom. I take a shower while I wait for him. I try to get all my tears out before he shows up. Surprisingly, there aren't that many. I'm too angry to cry, I think. I didn't know I was capable of reaching this level of anger, but I've reached it. And there might even be room for more anger. Who knows? Guess I'll see what I'm really capable of when my mother and I come face to face tomorrow. I get out of the shower and wrap a towel around myself. I blow dry my hair a little so that it's not dripping wet. I apply some mascara and pinch my cheeks because I look pale right now. Realizing your own mother is not the person you thought she was can really drain the color from your face. I'm looking for lip gloss when I hear a light tap on my window. I rush to my closet to find something to put on, but then I remember why Miller is here in the first place. He's here to get me naked. The towel will do just fine. I open my bedroom window while Miller takes off the screen. When he climbs inside, he glances around the room before he takes me in. When his eyes finally land on me, I can see his realization sink in. I'm pretty sure up until this point, he didn't think I was serious about losing my virginity to him tonight. But now that I'm standing in front of him, wearing nothing but a towel, his reaction becomes physical. He bites his fist and winces as he looks at me from head to toe.
Holy shit, Clara.
I would laugh, but I'm still too angry. I don't want him to feel my mood, though. I need to shake it off long enough to get this over with. Miller cups my face in his hands.
Are you absolutely positive this is what you want?
He's whispering, thank God. The last thing I need is for my mother to ruin this part of my life, too. I nod. Yes.
What about your mom? Where is she?
She's in her room. My door is locked. We'll be quiet. Plus, my music is on, so she won't hear us. Miller nods, but he seems nervous. I didn't expect him to be nervous.
I'm sorry if I keep asking if you're sure. I just wasn't expecting this to happen for a while, so...
70% of couples have sex on the first date. I think we've been really patient. Miller laughs quietly.
Did you just make up a fake statistic to try and get in my pants?
Did it work? He pulls his shirt over his head, and it falls to the floor.
It would have worked without the fake statistic.
He kisses me then. A full body kiss. The kind where our legs and bodies and arms are pressed together so close, not even air could pass between us. He backs me up to my bed, but stops before my legs meet my mattress. His kiss made this real. Before, when it was anger fueling my actions, I felt like this probably wouldn't happen. But now that he's here, and his shirt is on my floor, and I'm only wearing a towel, and we're about to be on my bed, it is very real. I'm about to have sex with Miller Adams. And I'm ready, I think. If my mother knew what was happening just 10 feet down the hall from her bedroom, it would destroy her. Yep, I'm definitely ready. My anger prompts me to drop my towel. When I do, Miller gasps and looks up at the ceiling. I'm confused that he's looking at the ceiling and not at me. I'm down here. His hands move to my hips, and he just rests them there, still staring up.
I know, I guess I'm used to sex being like baseball, you know. Lots of bases I have to make it to before I reach home plate. I feel like I'm cheating at the game.
That makes me laugh. When you hit a home run, Miller, it's your lucky night. He finally lowers his head, but he only looks at my face.
Get under the covers.
I grin and climb under the covers as he attempts to avert his eyes the whole time. He starts to climb under the covers with me, but I stop him. Take off your pants first. He tilts his head.
Why are we in such a hurry?
Because I don't want to change my mind.
Maybe that's a sign you aren't ready yet.
God, why can't he just be like other guys and be a complete asshole about this? I'm ready. I'm very ready. He focuses on my face for a moment, as if he's searching for a piece of me that's lying to him. He forgets what a great actress I am. He finally stands up and unbuttons his pants, then kicks them off. He's wearing boxer shorts with pineapples all over them. Sexy, he grins.
Thought you might like these.
I lift the covers and he slides into my bed with me, but then holds up a finger.
One sec.
He rolls over and reaches to the floor to grab his jeans. When he rolls back over, he's holding 4 condoms up like the choice is all mine.
Got them at the Valero on the corner. They're fruit-flavored.
Why are they flavored? Are condoms edible? My question makes Miller laugh.
No, it's for...
He suddenly blushes.
You know, if you put your mouth on it.
His answer makes me redden. My question shows just how inexperienced I am. The furthest I've ever gone with a guy is when Miller took my shirt off and we made out on his bed for an hour. I take the orange-flavored condom out of Miller's hand and set it on the nightstand. Not the orange one. It'll ruin the moment. Can't even believe you brought that into my house. He laughs.
Sorry. It was a vending machine in the men's bathroom. I didn't get to choose what came out of it.
Miller picks one of the remaining condoms and tosses the other two on the nightstand with the orange one. When he turns back to me, he slips his arm under the covers and pulls me against him. It scares me. The feeling of his skin against mine. Knowing his boxer shorts are the only thing separating us right now. He wraps a leg over me. And part of me is sad that I'm rushing it, because making out with him at his house was nice. But this is different. This isn't as intimate because so many steps are being skipped. And I know this, but I feel like I'm too far into it to change my mind. I bury my face in the crevice of his neck because I don't want him to look at me. I'm afraid of what he'll see when he looks in my eyes.
I don't have to put it on yet,
he whispers.
We can do other stuff first. I mean, technically, I haven't even touched your boob yet.
I grab his hand and slide it over my stomach up to my breast. He groans, and then he's the one burying his face in my neck. Let's just get the hard part over with first. Then we can do other stuff, I whisper. Miller nods, then pulls back and kisses me gently. I can feel him taking off his boxer shorts as he kisses me. He pulls away from my lips while he puts on the condom, but he keeps his mouth close to mine. His breath crashes against me in short spurts. When he rolls on top of me, he's looking down at me with eyes full of so many things. Longing. Appreciation. Wonder. I want to feel all the things he's feeling as we experience each other for the first time, but all I feel is betrayed. Lied to. Stupid.
Relax a little more, he says. It'll hurt less if you aren't so tense.
I try to relax, but it's difficult when all I can think of is how sorry I feel for Jenny. And Dad. And how this is the first time I've ever hoped that an afterlife doesn't exist. At least not one where Jenny and Dad can see how little Jonah and my mother are grieving for them. Miller's lips meet mine, and I'm grateful for the distraction. Then, something else distracts me. There's a pain and pressure between my legs when he begins to push into me, and then an even deeper pain coupled with a rush of air passing Miller's lips. I wince. He stops moving and kisses me gently on the corner of my mouth.
You okay?
I nod. He's kissing me again, and this time when he pushes against me, I feel it happen. It's a significant feeling, like there was a barrier deep inside me keeping us apart, but that barrier is gone, and Miller is moving against me now, and I just lost my virginity. It's both special and not. It's both painful and not. I regret it, and I don't. I lie still. My hands on his back, my legs around his. I like the feel of him against me, although I'm not sure I like the feel of what's happening as a whole. My heart isn't in it, which means my body is struggling to be in it. He's being gentle and sweet, and the sounds he's making are extremely sexy, but I don't feel it in my soul. My soul is too full of resentment to allow room for any of what's happening right now to enter. Part of me wishes I'd have waited. But it would have been with Miller regardless. In the grand scheme of things, would dragging it out a few more months have even made a difference? Probably. Okay, all of me wishes I'd have waited. I feel bad that I rushed it. I feel bad that my anger fueled this rash decision, but Miller seems to be enjoying himself, so there's that at least. Maybe I don't really feel the way I expected to feel in this moment, because I realized tonight that love is full of so much ugliness and betrayal, and maybe I don't want anything to do with it. What I think I feel for Miller is what Jenny probably felt for Jonah, and what my father probably felt for my mother. And look where that got them. Miller's mouth is on my neck now. One of his hands is gripping my thigh, and I kind of like the position we're in. Maybe the next time we're in this position, it'll hurt less, both physically and emotionally. Maybe I'll actually appreciate how much he enjoys it next time it happens. Maybe I'll actually enjoy it. But right now, I'm not enjoying anything. My mind won't stop going there. Their actions make me not believe in whatever Miller and I feel for each other. And that makes me sad. It hurts because I so want to believe in Miller and me. I want to believe in the way he looks at me. But I've seen my mother look at my father like that, so does it even mean anything? I want to believe Miller when he says he's never craved anyone like he craves me, but how long will that be true? Until he grows bored with me and finds a girl he craves more than me? Thank God I don't have a sister for him to fall in love with. I pull Miller closer, wanting my face hidden against his skin. I hate having these thoughts, especially right now. But Miller is the only thing in my life that's made me happy since they died, and now I'm scared my mother and Jonah have ruined that. Not only am I questioning them, and now Miller, but I'm questioning the whole stupid idea of monogamy and the validity of love and thinking how losing my virginity really isn't all that special. Because if love isn't real, then sex is just sex, no matter if it's your first time or your 50th time or your last time. It's just one body part in